Welcome back to the Homeschool Conversation podcast. I'm your host, Ashley Davis, and today I have a fun guest with us. Her name is Denise. And so Denise has been homeschooling her children, or I don't know if you're finished homeschooling your children now, but she is an international best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and creator of Cracking the Code to Free College. So let's welcome Denise onto the podcast. We're going to be talking all about college and scholarships and all that type of stuff. So welcome, Denise.
Sounds great. Thanks, Ashley. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to hear so much. I have so many questions for you about, you know, your journey to homeschooling and the path you've created for your children to be debt-free in college. So how did you even start out with your homeschooling and all of that? I'm curious.
Well, it was partly by necessity and partly just falling into it, actually. My daughter attended a local preschool a few mornings a week, and she began reading very early. But with local school systems not expecting the kids to read for another 2 years, what would she do in the meantime? That was what was on my mind. And then I began noticing homeschool families in our church and in our social circles that were homeschooling. And a friend invited me to the state homeschool convention. I saw normal families from all walks of life and kids of all ages who were well-behaved and respectful. And I figured we could give this a try. And if it didn't work out at any point in time, it wasn't fun anymore, guess what? The school system has to take them back. It's the law.
That's true. So you kind of fell into it by going to that convention, and you were convinced after that point.
Exactly.
Okay. So then did you think that you were going to homeschool forever, or what was your thought at that point, that you would just try it out?
Oh, goodness, no. I literally homeschooled one textbook 1 year at a time. I didn't think about high school until my daughter at age 12 asked if we could homeschool high school. And what flashed before my eyes at that time was high school, then college. Holy cow, I'm responsible for getting them into college.
Yeah.
I literally broke down sobbing the morning I was going to choose our high school curriculum at the convention. I was terrified that I would do something wrong, that they would miss something and not be prepared for college.
Right.
But my husband came alongside and said it would be fine. I had done a good job so far, and his support and confidence really made the difference.
Wow. Isn't that so important to have a supportive system, whether it's your husband or just support system somewhere? We always talk about that on this podcast, how powerful it can be to have support in your circle.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. So then how many kids, just for the listeners that don't know your story, how many kids did you homeschool and how old were they when you were starting out?
I have two, and my daughter began homeschooling at age 5 in the kindergarten timeframe. And my son was born at the same time. And when I had announced that I was going to be homeschooling with a newborn, people thought I had lost my mind.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's what people ask me also, because I have twins in addition to my older two that I homeschool, my 9 and 7 year old. And then when I had twins, they were like, well, you're going to send your kids back to school, right? And I was like, no, I don't think I can handle waking up in the morning with them and doing projects that are like on someone else's time zone. So I was like, no, actually, I can't handle sending my kids back to school. I need them home, actually. They need to learn about what's about to happen in our family. So did you find that was the case for you too, when you had the baby, that you found it more convenient actually to homeschool?
It was actually, I think, one of the best things in the world. And again, my choices are not everyone's choices. You have to do what's right for your family. But we had my daughter in the delivery room when my son was born.
Oh my goodness, how beautiful.
We did prepare her, thank you. We did prepare her. We actually, the hospital that I gave birth at had a siblings class. And so they prepared the children ahead of time. So it was really, really cool. What was neat is that the very first voice my son heard was my daughter's.
Oh.
So that was really neat. They have a very close relationship.
Right. And so now, how old are they now, did you say?
Well, they're both college graduates, I'm happy to say.
Oh my goodness.
My daughter is 29, I believe, now, and my son will be 24 in a few weeks.
Wow. That is so awesome. So you have a lot of homeschooling experience under your belt, and it's just awesome to have you here to pick your brain and ask you about, just your journey through it. So you have the 5-year-old, you have the new baby, you don't really have a plan necessarily to homeschool all the way through high school, or did you? Did you think eventually, when did it hit you that you were going to just continue?
Well, I figured by the time my daughter asked that question, and I actually was doing the research, and remember, this was at age 12, so I figured I had a year, right, or so to research and find out if this was even okay. Can you really homeschool high
I
school?
know,
Is it
is this
legal,
legal?
right? So I think that when I was choosing curriculum, which is what most homeschool high school families are doing, when you're choosing your own curriculum for high school, you begin to realize that, hey, I can't flip back and forth between curriculum or vendors too easily during high school, because then you really might miss something. What if something, a specific concept or subject is being taught in, let's say, ninth grade in one curriculum vendor and in 10th grade in another? So you have to really think about that ahead of time. But once I realized, okay, this is for real, what do they need to know? I went ahead and took a look at what do colleges expect from their incoming freshmen, and just pretty much followed those guidelines for the base curriculum.
Okay, so then you had some access to expectations, and you planned behind, I guess, so to speak, like you planned backwards. You started with your goals and then traced yourself backwards, which is, I think that's really smart to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So then did your children end up skipping grades or like attending college before the traditional age of 18, or how did that end up unfolding for you?
Well, I made a conscious decision not to allow my kids to get ahead or skip grades. I
Okay.
kept them at grade level, regardless of how fast they could learn. And let's face it, when you homeschool, you realize pretty quickly that they don't need 8 hours a day for elementary school. But my reasoning was twofold. First, I'm a planner. My mom had passed away at age 43, with kids still at home as young as age 9. I was in college at the time when she passed. But with that in mind, it was important to me that if something were to happen to me and I couldn't homeschool, that it would be less difficult to place them in a traditional school if needed. Now, my second reason for not getting them ahead was the social aspect. I couldn't imagine a 15-year-old having much in common with a college student as far as conversation is concerned outside of the classroom. And there are social milestones such as getting your driver's license or going on your first date, or going out for your first beer on your 21st birthday. And in my mind, a young high school student is still waiting for those milestones and can't relate to them or participate. So, yeah, and keeping them at grade level instead of moving on to the next textbook, we added electives and extracurriculars, which actually ended up serving them better for both college and in life. So they did attend a local college for dual enrollment, though, while they were in high school. So this is a way to gain the classroom experience and advance their studies while still at home. But they didn't go away to college until I had graduated them at about age 18, as you say.
Okay, so then they finished high school, like they had their diploma by at what age or what point did they get their diploma?
My son was within a few days of his 18th birthday, and my daughter was 18 and maybe a few months.
Okay, so they still got their diploma at the normal age, but I guess the difference is that then they also had college credits at the age of 18.
Correct. They had a few. Now, there are families that will start their children a little earlier, or even because they have so much time on their hands as a homeschool student, they might take almost a full load of college classes while they're still technically in high school and haven't received their high school diploma. And that's called dual enrollment. You're enrolled in two separate schools, your home school and your college, at the same time. So it has a lot of advantages. One of the advantages is getting that early credit. The disadvantage is not knowing ahead of time what 4-year college your student will attend after they graduate high school. Where are they going to go from there? Because if you gain all these wonderful credits, and it is wonderful, will that four-year college accept all of those credits toward their degree?
Right, the dreaded transfer issue.
Yes.
Yeah, that's even an issue when with college students within transferring from college to college. It's an issue of transferring credits, and it can be such a wasted. I used to think it was a wasted effort because if they don't take the credit, it feels like a waste. But I do feel like it's still a valuable experience to have taken the class, even if the credits don't actually transfer. But I mean, obviously, that's not the best use of time to take classes just for experience and not get credit for them, which is something I was going to ask you too, actually. If your kids did take advantage of like AP classes, you know how they, a lot of high schools promote kids taking AP classes, and then if they score a certain level on their AP exam, then they may or may not get like intro level credit. Did your kids do that, or did they just opt for straight college credit at a university or at a community college?
Where we were at the time, the AP courses were not available to homeschoolers.
Oh,
so
okay.
That wasn't an option. But you're right that taking AP courses, whether you're homeschool or not, or in a traditional school, still doesn't guarantee actual college credit, even if you score a 3 or 5. It's going to depend on the college that you attend.
Right. And then I think that gives a lot of parents who are having their kids take these AP classes are under such a false impression that their kids are getting college credit, and they really aren't unless they score like a 5 or 6 on that exam, I think. And then even still, you may only get credit for like Bio 101, which is not going to fulfill what you actually need, which is the higher level bios. So it's just like a false advertising almost, you know, with the AP classes. I feel like the college credit route is much more straight shoot for what you're going to get. You know exactly what credit you're getting.
I think I agree with you, because in addition, I've seen students really taking, you know, the maximum AP courses that their high school will allow, 5 courses per year. That's a lot of work. Where do you fit in extracurricular activities or community service and that personal maturing and growth that comes from just being in high school?
Right.
So it is something parents have to think about for sure.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you about that too. How did your kids find the balancing of that workload of being in high school, but also being enrolled in college? Like, do you remember what classes they were taking and how they found that balancing of that workload? To me, it sounds like a lot of work to do both.
It can be, but I think that because we didn't do a full load of college, we only had them take 1 or 2 classes per semester. It wasn't as big a deal as you would think. And I think there has to be a strategy with what classes, what college classes is your student taking? Why are you having them take those classes? For me, I had my kids take the English, the first level, you know, the first freshman year English courses to start with, because I didn't feel confident in my ability to teach writing. I'm really good at editing. I can tell you if it's right, but I can't necessarily teach it. I didn't feel confident in that way. So to me, that was a smart move. That was a meaningful way of getting that credit in. And in some states, you're allowed to take those dual enrollment courses and count them as high school credit as well. That's what's called dual credit versus dual enrollment. A lot of people interchange those two terms, and they're not the same. They have a very different meaning. Another thing that you can do as a homeschool family, and this is something that worked out for us for a couple of things. When my students were able to get really high ACT or SAT scores in a particular area, I figured we were done with that area. So why take English grammar all the way through high school, 4 years in a row, if you get a 36 in the English grammar portion of the SAT or the ACT?
Right.
It's a perfect score. You're kind of wasting that hour in your class day that could be used for something more.
Right. And so then your kids were able to then, if they were dual enrolled, or is it not dual enrolled? They were dual.
Enrolled and dual credit.
So they were taking, like in your example, they were taking college level English, but they were getting high school level English credit as well at the same time.
Correct. So on my high school transcript, I added the high school English credit as well as a reference that they took this class at the local college.
Wow, that is just so smart and so wise. So now on the financial side of things, because I know you said that your kids ended up going to college without debt somehow. So is that, did you have to pay for these classes, or was it part of like their high school, like was it part of their high school's program that they did that? Because I know my high school had a, like a contract with some colleges that we wouldn't have to pay to take a certain level, a certain amount of credits. So I did that when I was in high school, and we didn't have to pay for a certain amount of credits at the college.
And that is an awesome opportunity if it's available in your state. Not all states offer free community college credits to high school students. Some of them are discounted. Some of them, you got to pay full freight when it comes to those courses while the kid is still in high school. For us, it was greatly reduced for those few classes while they were in high school.
Okay.
It was when they went to their four-year college that we were able to get them to go completely debt-free without paying a single dime for the 4 years. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would blow a lot of my listeners' minds that your kids were able to go to college without debt, because I think a lot of us, we all think that that's the goal, really. At the end of our homeschool journey, we want our kids to be able to go to college, but we aren't really thinking about the financial side of it. I think a lot of us are planning to have to pay for it. We're hoping they get a scholarship, but we are kind of doubtful that even a sports scholarship is on the table if they're not in school. So it's definitely something that I think the homeschool world needs to think about a little more intentionally. You know, are we, is the onus on us to pay for college because our kids aren't on the same playing field to get scholarship opportunities as their public school peers, or not? You know, are there things we're not thinking about? So I'm excited to hear about like your tactics with how were you able to accomplish that if your kids were homeschooled to get your kids through college without debt?
Well, I will say that in the beginning, I was pretty worried that, you know, how would we even get them accepted into college? Are they going to accept my mommy transcript is what I call it, right?
Yes.
And I think a lot of homeschool families feel the same way. What makes that transcript work, and what kind of hoops am I going to have to jump through to get them accepted? And I will say that for many schools or some number of colleges and universities, there are extra hoops you will have to jump through. Therefore, I highly recommend looking at colleges on their website for what extra things does the homeschool community need to do. Some colleges require the student to take some SAT-2 exams. SAT-2 exams. The SAT-2 exams are specific subjects. So the regular SAT that everyone is familiar with covers a little bit of everything. It's got a little math, it's got a little English, got some grammar, got some literature. It's pretty much a little bit of, you know, what you might expect to have on a college entrance exam. But the SAT-2 exams seem to be a little closer related to an AP exam. It's a specific subject. So if the student did well in an honors course, for example, in biology or in a specific type of math, maybe calculus or something, they can take an SAT-2 in an advanced math type of thing. There's plenty of different opportunities. But most schools that are requiring you to jump through a hoop may ask for SAT-2 exams, and they will be specific. I want an SAT-2 English and I want an SAT-2 math. What they're asking for here is for you to prove the transcript. So the SAT or the ACT score isn't enough to prove the transcript. Again, it's my mommy transcript, right? So they're not 100% sure that you're not lying on there.
Yeah.
So you can't fault them. But most of the time when you see extra hoops, it's coming from a private college, not necessarily a public college or university. What I have found though is that these hoops are somewhat reasonable when you start looking at the higher level colleges and universities. MIT is going to expect everyone to submit more than just a transcript. And they may have another hoop for a homeschooler to jump through. It's really not as bad as you think, but you do need to be a little bit aware early on so that you're prepared for those extras ahead of time. Because by the time your student is applying to those colleges, you don't want to have to wait for another testing date and then have to report it later. You want to get those applications in early.
Right. Yeah, so I mean, that is important, I think, because if you're preparing and aware of what you're going to need to do for high school level, I feel like you probably need to start planning and thinking about this stuff in the middle school years, just to start preparing yourself for what you're going to expect, I guess. Because I feel like, when do you start preparing and thinking about high school? You know, I feel like you have to be prepared always several steps ahead.
Well, it's true. I think that homeschoolers have an advantage. And you mentioned that, you know, homeschoolers maybe are at a disadvantage. But the truth is, I believe homeschoolers are at an advantage because we have to make the decision for the high school curriculum with college in mind. Whereas for traditional school students, yeah, they might be thinking that, okay, I'm sending my kid to this school, this local high school, and we're leaving it up to the school to make sure my kid gets the courses they need in order to be accepted to college. Not everyone at every school is on a college prep track. So you do have to be more aware. But as homeschoolers, I think that we are aware of that. One of the things that I think that homeschoolers have as an advantage is that we can not only create what they need for their curriculum, but we can also know ahead of time what is necessary when it comes to extracurricular and things such as that. But you're right, being aware of certain things is one of the most important things. For example, in order to graduate debt-free, there are things they need to know ahead of time, such as it actually takes an average of 21 years today to pay off a bachelor's degree. Now,
oh yeah, yeah, 21 years.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's really, are you kidding me? Back when I was in school, it was 10 years. You signed a contract for 10 years, you paid it off in 10 years. But 21 years today is the average. So obviously there are some that pay it off before and some that are longer. When you co-sign for your kid's student loan, it becomes your loan. Mm-hmm. So not only does your son or daughter carry $100,000 or $200,000 debt, so do you. Right. So for you, the parent, it significantly reduces your buying power just as it does your kids. And also, the bank may not contact you when your young adult misses a payment or defaults on the loan, which is now going to impact the parent's credit score as well.
Right.
So that's the parent side of the student loan debt. For the kids, when your kids go to school debt-free, they have financial freedom. And freedom from the financial stress that everyone else has.
Right.
So while they're in college, they're not worried about that mounting debt or how they're going to pay for next semester. They can take summer vacations or even take unpaid summer internships.
Right.
Without a loan.
Totally different quality of life.
It's a whole different quality of life. And think about after college, when they don't have student loans to pay back. They can invest in their retirement 10 or 20 years earlier than their peers.
Right.
So try this one on for size. Investing as little as $400 per month, they can possibly have a net worth of over $4 million by age 67 and live the life of their dreams instead of spending half their life paying off college debt.
Right, because that is about what the average monthly student payment is. It's at least $400, and that's probably not even, that's probably the lower end. I would say my student loan debt is closer to like $700 a month. So it's a tremendous chunk of change, and it's something that could be going to something way better than paying back. So how did you guys actually do that? Did you do scholarships, or was there a program that you followed to accomplish that?
Well, for us, I have to back up just a hair, because in all honesty, I would not have gone through all of this effort in learning about this process if it had not been for the fact that just before my daughter started high school, he was laid off twice, and then the stock market fell, and we had to use what was left in the stock market to pay the bills. Well, eventually that money runs out, and we had to declare bankruptcy. So suddenly I'm realizing, wait a minute, we have no cash and now we have no credit to be able to co-sign for student loans. How on God's green earth were we going to pay for college? Mm-hmm. That's when I started doing the research. And everyone told me, you're starting too early. This is ridiculous. Don't start. Don't even need any of that until junior year of high school. That's what we all believe. But it's an incorrect myth. I did probably 7,000 hours of research or more. And one of the most important things that I learned is that not everyone has student loan debt. Matter of fact, 30% of college students graduate debt-free. And that's 600,000 college students every year.
That's amazing.
But that doesn't make news. That's not going to be on the front page.
No.
I have two homeschool children, and they attended college on $190,000 in free money for 4 years, debt-free, with cash left over. So this process is repeatable. Obviously, with so many students actually going to college debt-free, it can be done. What I ended up doing is I put together an idea. I understood what was necessary to get scholarships. I figured out what colleges were looking for admission. I went through the entire thing of interviewing other college students and parents. What is it that we have to do? Because, honey, I'm desperate. And desperation means I need to be dedicated to this process. And so I was. It was literally a second full-time job, right? You're researching, finding out what to do. In the end, I ended up with a process that was repeatable because not only was I able to do it with my daughter, we did the exact same thing with my son. And now I coach other parents as well in how to put together this program for their own kids. And as I said, homeschoolers have an advantage because we're going to start early.
Right.
Students that are waiting until senior year, they're actually leaving a lot of money on the table and they don't realize it. My course, Cracking the Code to Free College, starts with your roadmap. It doesn't matter what grade your student is in. We start with the roadmap, and here's why. The roadmap takes you through all the components to understand how they fit together, so you don't miss any steps. A large part of parent anxiety is wondering, have I missed anything? Is there anything we didn't get from a high school counselor or the college that we need to do to make sure my son or daughter is successful? So the roadmap, you can be sure that they haven't missed anything. The next step is the activities. And this is where you find out what colleges are really looking for. What is it that is going to impress them? And one of the things you'll discover is that there are certain activities that will remain on your child's resume throughout adulthood because they are that impressive. These are activities that showcase your teen's character. Employers want them. Colleges and universities want them. It's important to have these activities on your student's resume. And so then we place those activities in the roadmap. Now, of course, I don't have time with you. Your program is not going to be 3 hours long, so
right.
We can't go into great detail about that. But I'll invite parents to a more in-depth training later. The next step is the resume. Now, Ashley, when we think about a resume, what do we usually think of?
I mean, I usually think of what your experience is, your education, your work experience, and then you have skills that you might have that set you apart, and references. Those are like the four main categories I think of.
Right, and the resume's purpose is for employment, to get a job.
Right.
We typically think that a high school student doesn't need a resume until they are going for employment.
Until they need one.
Right, until they really need one, exactly. But I had a mentor when my students were really young. My daughter was probably 12 or 13. And she had students who homeschooled who had gone to college also debt-free. And she talked about the resume and explained, no, this starts at the beginning of high school. So this is very different. It's a whole new ball game, not at all like a resume for an employment. It's specifically for high school to college. And we developed this resume for your student, and it takes them all the way from high school to college and then beyond that. We'll show you how you make changes again for college internships and for postgraduate employment. We use that resume to fill out their college applications and their scholarship applications. After we've got that taken care of, now we're on to finding the money. This is where most parents make a mistake. They come to me because they want scholarships. They know there's a gap in their finances and they just want to find scholarships. But they don't realize that the process doesn't start with, hey, give me some money. The right. process begins with step one, having a plan. Can you believe that scholarships begin in kindergarten?
No. No, yeah. I cannot. That, what?
It blows your mind. I know, absolutely. So there is no such thing as too early. The second you think, oh, we might need money for college, that's when you need to call me, because trust right. me, we can find money. And your kids can also, they can take the ACT as young as sixth grade.
Wow.
The earlier you begin the process, the more opportunities there are. But even as a high school senior or college student still, there's still free money to be had. There are deadlines every single month. It's never too late to get started. But before I continue, I do want to dispel the myth that scholarships are for kids with high GPAs and test scores. 10 of the 14 scholarships that my two kids won didn't ask for grades or test scores. There are more than a billion scholarships available, and most are just a short essay on a topic.
Wow. I mean, that's the thing that I found overwhelming when I was applying for scholarships for myself back in high school. I mean, this is only, I'm 30 now, so this is probably like 12 years ago, 13 years ago, that I was applying for scholarships. And I remember there being scholarships for the most bizarre things, like for having red hair scholarship, or for being a minority, like just for being a minority, you were allowed to apply. And I just thought, at the time, I thought it was kind of unfair. I was like, how can you get a scholarship just for being a certain ethnic group or having a certain appearance? But I guess there's just been a lot of scholarships that have been created to help provide opportunity and finance to all groups of people, and to make it equal that everyone's able to get money. But I think the information, that information being disseminated to all those groups isn't actually happening. So not everybody's even aware, like you said, that you can get a scholarship if you're not an athlete and you're not a scholar. You know, what are those scholarship opportunities outside? So I feel like for me, when I was applying to scholarships, I found it overwhelming to apply to them because there was so many. So in your course then, these scholarship opportunities are being matched to the student's current profile?
I show the parents how and where to look and how to develop that profile. What is it that, you know, where are those scholarships that the student has the most opportunities, the most chance of winning? Because you don't want to apply necessarily for a scholarship that the child has no interest in writing that essay. If it's like pulling teeth, forget it. You are literally wasting your time. The topic, the answer to that topic, that essay really needs to come easily. So it's better for you to be applying for something that interests you, right? And for example, we don't skip any steps with this program between my kids and my clients. When my daughter was applying for high school scholarships, I discovered that the high dollar scholarships, those applications, begin with pages and pages of checkboxes of typical high school activities so that they can narrow down the hundreds of thousands of applications, because you're gonna have more people applying for a $20,000 or a $50,000 scholarship than you will for a $500 scholarship, right?
Right.
Now, although my daughter had an impressive resume, she could not check enough boxes to get to the next level where she could actually show her accomplishments. So, when my son was coming up, I knew what boxes needed to be checked. I created opportunities for him to be able to check those boxes. In the end, my son became a Coca-Cola semifinalist. Knowing what boxes need to be checked from the beginning of high school or even late middle school is such an advantage in being able to plan your high school roadmap. And again, it's something that I think homeschoolers have an advantage to be able to do. There's definitely more time to be able to create those opportunities for your child. Now that we know where to find the money and your teen can check enough boxes, in step 5, we focus on writing those essays that win. What does it take to write an essay for both college admissions and scholarships that will give your teen the best chances of winning? And again, we go into much more depth in another training. But I find when you're finding the money and you're winning those essays, then you have to start thinking about that college admissions area. One of the things that was important to me was making sure that my children did not look like everybody else's kids. You want them to stand out. So how do they stand out in that college application? What I ended up creating, and remember, I also wasn't sure that they were going to accept that mommy transcript, okay?
Right.
So I ended up creating this application package that markets your child to the college or university. I've had colleges call the student begging them to come to their school. It's quite impressive.
It is.
And it also became the basis for the Elk's Most Valuable Student Scholarship application. That scholarship has a deadline early in the fall of senior year, but it takes a lot of work to put together because it's a biggie. It's one of the bigger scholarships in the country. Both my kids won Elk's scholarships.
Wow.
It's, again, I would not, no way in God's green would I have gone through this effort if it wasn't for the financial difficulties that we had early on. I believed like everybody else did. You don't bother with any of this until high school junior year.
Right. And I do think that the whole process of navigating scholarships is so overwhelming. I found that for myself as a student, applying to all the scholarships and all the work that goes into writing the essays for them, and then you don't win them. I feel like that process alone is very, it's very hard to be resilient through that because you are putting in work by writing these essays. Did you guys face any challenges during this process of trying to apply to scholarships and accomplish a debt-free outcome?
Well, I think that what made it work for us was the strategy behind it. And I will admit, you've got to be dedicated to the process. You can't just throw in 20 scholarship applications and call it good and then be disappointed that you didn't win any.
That was
it. It is a numbers game. I'm sorry to say it is a numbers game. But in addition to that, there is a strategy for winning scholarships. Let me just give you an example, because the same is true when it comes to college applications and the essays that are in the college applications. And it's the same for employers, actually, now that I think about it. You have to look at who the company is that is offering the free money. What kind of person do they hire? Who are they? What's important to that company? What character traits are important? If you can figure that out with some type of mission statement, perhaps, or if the scholarship is named after someone, who was that individual? If you can fit in those character traits legitimately, right, you're not faking it or what have you, you have a much better chance of winning that scholarship. Also, in the strategy of finding the right scholarships, the scholarship has to be personal to the student. If you're writing an essay on fire extinguishers and you can give a crud about fire extinguishers, it's going to show.
Right.
You know, think about reading anything, any piece of literature, any newspaper article or magazine article. You can kind of tell whatever attitude that the writer had as they were writing. It's not about the words. I don't understand how it happens, but that feeling comes through in the writing. So you really have to make sure that the application, it wasn't just something you just threw in because it was an application that came across your desk. It needs to be something that was strategic, that yes, I can speak to that. I have a passion about that.
Right. And I guess that only really comes across through having had experiences, having had exposure, and having had the opportunity to even know what you're talking about. Otherwise, like you said, if you've never had experience or exposure to things, then it comes across and you can't fake an experience or fake a passion for something. So I feel like that's true, that homeschoolers maybe do get a lot more exposure to a more variety of life experiences and passions in different people than maybe a traditionally schooled student would, when they're seeing the same people every day and they're not getting to go on as many field trips and interact with as many people. So it's, I always think it's funny when people say that about homeschoolers, that they're not, you know, in the real world, because I feel like kids that are in school are actually in a little bit of a bubble, you know, they're seeing the same people and having the same experiences.
But right. I can talk anybody into homeschooling. Seriously, I've been, you know, taking my children to get a snowball or an ice cream cone and strike up a conversation with the fellow with his children, and they'll find out that we're homeschooling. Oh, we could never do that. And what about socialization? You know, that topic always comes up.
Yes.
And I'll ask him, okay, so you have a job, right? Yes, ma'am. Okay, well, the people that you work with, are they all the same age? Well, no, of course not.
Yeah.
Do they have the same experiences? Do they live in the same neighborhood? And then they get it. Students who are attending traditional school have the same experiences, the same, they're learning the same identical things. They're all the same age for 12 years. Mm-hmm. That's not real life. The good news is that homeschoolers have experiences with all ages. They can communicate with all ages at all levels. They're the ones who are socialized.
It's ironic, isn't it? it's ironic. So how did your kids find that experience to be that transition? I think a lot of people worry about, you know, so how did your kids do in college? Did they find it hard to sit and wait their turn to speak in the classroom? Or did they find it hard when they got a zero on their first test, that they never had a test, that type of thing? Did your kids experience any type of like shell shock when they did get into college?
Well, I mean, it was interesting because being homeschooled, you would think that your kids would automatically want to go to a school that has small classrooms, you know, let's just keep it somewhat palatable. But no, both my kids ended up attending a college, a university with over 35,000 students.
Wow.
And they felt comfortable there. They knew when they walked on campus that this was home. They felt at home. But when it comes to being able to feel comfortable in that classroom environment, I think what helps is if you can find an opportunity as a homeschool, high school parent, to have your students take a class with other kids within your homeschool community. It can be a co-op, or it can literally be just a parent who knows more about a subject than you do, or you can teach it yourself. For example, we had in our homeschool group, there was a mom who had a biology degree, and she taught the high school sciences in her home. She had probably 20 kids at a time in her home. And my daughter said about that experience is that it gave her an idea of what the bantering between students in a classroom would have been like had she gone to you know, quote, traditional high school. So that was kind of nice to be able to get that experience. Also, being able to attend a college, now this was a community college, during their high school years helped them to see not only the importance and how to take school seriously, but they also saw the difference when they went on to the four-year school, how those students did not take their education as seriously. Because one thing you have to remember, in a community college setting, the vast majority are adults returning to work, returning to school. Mm. So these are people with jobs taking one or two classes or three classes so that they can get their degree. They're serious. They have a plan. Whereas many students in colleges today, the reason they're dropping out or flunking out is because they probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. They were brought up to go to college.
Right.
But no one thought about asking, is this where you are training your child up where they're supposed to be? Is this really right? What is the plan for their life? So having a little bit of that experience did make a difference. As far as the grades are concerned, I will say that my daughter pretty much almost had a nervous breakdown when she got a B, her first B. She was like totally freaking out. Oh my gosh. Unbelievable. And what was even funnier than that, she had a 97 on an exam and went to the teacher to fight for the extra points.
Oh my goodness.
The teacher looked at the grade. Well, of course, you know, she's looking at a specific question. Let me ask you about this question, you know, because this particular professor gave you a week to basically say that maybe something wasn't right in the scoring, because think people make mistakes, and it was good that they own up to that. So she goes to him with this one question on the exam. And so they're discussing it, et cetera, et cetera. And he says, wait a minute, because he suddenly realizes who he's talking to and what grade she got. What was your grade? He looks at her grade again. Why are you here?
Right. You've got a 97. Take it and be happy.
Got the A. Isn't that good enough? But what my daughter understands is the math behind your GPA. Those extra 3 quality points at the end of that semester could turn out to be the difference between an A and a B at the end.
Right.
So if you know that you deserve those points, you fight for them.
That is hilarious. So what did she and your other child end up majoring in and finishing their degrees with? I'm curious now.
Let's see. My daughter's degree is in she majored in business with a minor in communication studies. She exited college with Latin honors and an additional scholarship, literally her diploma in one hand and a check in the other from her college. She also exited college with a business in hand. One of the things that she had the opportunity to do was to compete in a college level pitch contest, you know, a business pitch contest.
Oh, like a Shark Tank.
Exactly. It was so funny. And so she had to pitch at her school. Everybody, it wasn't just business students. Any student from any curriculum could apply to do their pitch. She won for her school. They sent her to the national competition and she ended up winning 2nd place, which, wow, by the way, also came with another $2,000. So that was nice.
Wow.
So she did pretty well. We were very, very excited. She knew early on what she wanted to do. She wanted to do like event planning early on. So that was going to be one of her businesses. That's not the business she ended up starting off with after college though. What she ended up doing was women's conceal carry holsters.
Oh, but you see, it's all part of the process. You know, I guess you take what you learn, something from each part. And that's what I was trying to say earlier, is that sometimes it's not about like finishing that goal that you initially thought was the goal. Sometimes that goal is just part of the bigger goal.
Exactly. You really don't know. And this is a child who the first time she held a pistol in her hand at a range with the family right there with her was so terrified she cried.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's where it started. She went from that to owning her own business with and going to gun shows, et cetera. It was just phenomenal, just crazy. And she's actually a range safety officer and an instructor now.
Oh my goodness.
At Engel Range. So my son, on the other hand, had no idea what he wanted to do in college, just none whatsoever. But what was interesting is that, and again, you mentioned experiences. There was a summer in high school, probably freshman year. And I love to find opportunities for my kids. I think that is my parent responsibility. One summer, I sent him to 5 different camps. Most of them were free. I think 1 or 2 of them were paid, but they were inexpensive and reasonable. By the time we get to the 5th camp, he's asking me, tell me again why I'm going to this camp. I said, because my job is to give you opportunities. Your job is to find your passion. Well, at the end of that particular camp, and again, he's a boy and he doesn't talk much. So I asked him, I said, okay, we've done this for 5 days. You've said nothing about this camp. Just tell me, what was it that you liked the most? He said, well, I liked the robots. And then he backed up a minute and said, actually, it was programming the robots. I said, son, I have a degree in computer programming. We can do that. So as I mentioned, being a parent of a homeschool student, you can have or host your own homeschool classes if you want. So I hosted a computer programming class for the middle school and the high school students in our group. Who knew how this was going to turn out? But my son has a mechanical engineering degree, that's his major, with an aerospace engineering minor, and his forte is the computer-aided design. He lives for that.
Wow.
So you just never know. It's the experiences that you give them, and you look really carefully at what they really enjoy. What puts that glint in their eye?
Right. So now, I mean, now that you're kind of, I don't know if I would say you're at the end of your journey, but now that your homeschooling journey has kind of moved on to its next chapter, if you knew back then what you know now, that your kids would end up where they are now successfully having graduated college, like, would you have done anything differently or told yourself something?
I think, and I love that question. To be honest with you, no one's ever asked it before. I don't think I would do a darn thing different.
That's awesome.
I really don't.
To be able to say.
It is, and I'll be honest with you, at the end, when my quote homeschool, personal homeschool journey was over, at my son's homeschool, high school graduation, I'm getting choked up, my husband, my daughter, and my son told me how impacted they were by their homeschool journey.
Oh, that is so awesome.
It was the coolest thing, the stuff that they said, that you don't realize how important, how many things they really learn from you as a parent when they're with you 24/7. Mm-hmm. They really are picking up on those character traits and the individuality and just being able to manage a household. My husband was out of town a lot, and you know, my daughter learned how, by seeing my example, how to do things, how to call, you know, a repairman and take care of things yourself, right? How to hire someone to mow your lawn. What does it take to be a woman who has children at home, homeschooling your kids, but yet some of these things still have to get done and dad's not home? How do you handle that? And when she was engaged, when she first got engaged, she realized, hey, I never thought about being a military spouse before. Mm-hmm. It just didn't cross her mind at all. But then she realized the way she grew up, with her dad being out of town quite a bit, actually trained her for this. Mm. She understood how do you go about moving every 2 or 3 years? You know, how do you manage that? And how do you manage being at home by yourself and taking care of the household? It was amazing that she gleaned that from the life that she lived growing up in our household.
And you know what I'm thinking as I'm listening to you explain this is that your kids didn't just finish college financially debt-free, but they also finished college with a debt, knowledge debt-free. Like, they aren't in debt of knowledge, of knowing how to live their life. They're not in debt. You know, they've gotten to experience more and live more. So now when they're choosing their life for themselves, they're able to really give back and create business to give back to the community, which I think is what most parents want for their kids when they're homeschooling them, is they want their kids to grow up to be like productive members of society that actually help people and know how to use their passions to do that. But that can be such a confusing process to navigate. So, I mean, as we start to finish up here, I want us to get information for where we can contact you about your course. But I also want to see if you'd give any, you know, final words of advice to any of our listeners that are just starting out their homeschool journey, or, you know, maybe they're kind of stuck with their homeschool journey as their kids begin high school. They feel skeptical about continuing homeschooling. They don't know if they're going to do a good enough job. They feel like they just want to outsource everything. Do you have any advice for people who are kind of in their first or second chapter of homeschooling?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, you can do it. Trust me. It doesn't matter whether you have a college degree or barely a high school diploma. It honestly doesn't matter. The parent wants the best for their child. And as much as teachers are trying their hardest, they can't give individual attention in a classroom of 15, 20, or 30. When I was teaching a small class of 5 homeschool students, high school math, I realized at that point, you cannot move any faster than the slowest person in the room. Doesn't matter the subject, that's just the way it is. So how much more difficult will it be in a traditional classroom? So as a homeschool parent, you can go as fast or as slow as your student needs it to be. And that's what's important. Everyone is going to learn at a different rate. So just because the textbook says that a student should read by age 6 or age 7 doesn't mean that they will. It might be age 8 or 9, and that's okay. Just open up your heart and do your best and look for opportunities. The same is true for high school. I've seen students learn algebra as early as middle school and as late as in their early 20s. To me, it's a switch that goes off in the brain. So it's still doable no matter what. So anybody can do it, whether you're, you know, starting off in your homeschool journey as a new parent trying to figure this out. Trust me, you're not going to screw it up, because I thought I could. I thought it was possible to mess this up, and no, it's not. I even had one year, a whole 8 or 9 months when I had to be in physical therapy a lot. We did no school whatsoever.
For 9 months.
9 months of no school. So parents, if, you know, moms, if you're expecting and you're in bed rest, don't worry about it. Trust me, it'll be just fine. Just let your kids read. Let them find something to read, whether you take them to the library or something to that nature. Just reading is, order books on Amazon. Let them read and they'll be just fine. For the high school journey portion of it, my suggestion is to add things such as logic to your curriculum. That is something we are desperately in need of in our communities today. People don't understand that what they read or what they see on television, it has a bias. Everything has a bias, whether it's a newspaper, a magazine, what have you, a billboard even. I remember taking my son to see a new billboard that was up, and he was, young, 13 years old, 12, 13 years old. This was a billboard for a beer commercial, a beer company. And it was a photograph of a gentleman and a lady sitting next to each other. I think they were on the flatbed of a truck or something. And the gentleman was holding a beer bottle. And I asked my son, I said, "What is this billboard telling you?" He said, "It says that if I drink that beer, I get that girl." Bingo. Mm. That's exactly right. That's exactly what they're trying to tell you. So if you teach them these things in everyday life, and look, there really are books to teach your kids logic, and they're not hard to go through. They're really very easy to understand. So you can utilize that as an elective, and they will learn. I remember asking my daughter a couple of years back when things were getting kind of crazy in the world, and I asked her, I said, "Why is it that you and your brother are not swayed by the rhetoric of the day?" And she said, "Because you taught us logic." Oh, okay. Well, right. It makes sense now. I hadn't even thought about that, but I taught them how to think and how to glean and read for bias and understand when somebody's trying to sell you something, basically.
Right. And that's important, because I think in the world that's going into artificial intelligence and robots and so much that people think is valuable to know with memorizing things, soon a robot will be able to do all of these things for us. So if you're feeding your children like you're just dumping a hose into a bucket, like they're the bucket and you're the hose, and you're going to dump all this knowledge into their heads, and we think that that's going to be a good enough education, I feel like it's such an important point to ponder that it's more important to teach them how to think, because that's something that a robot is going to be slower at, not going to be as skilled at, and that's something that's going to make your child less replaceable in their career path and as an individual in society and as a parent and so on and so forth. It's important to know how to think. And then I guess what you're saying too is that once they do know how to think for themselves, then they're able to actually learn without needing someone to spoon feed them and say, "This is XYZ or the news," you know, even today with the coronavirus and all of the police rioting and all of the things that are crazy in the world. I feel like it's so important for our kids to really think is this real news? Is this real news? Is this someone else's perspective? Like, do I have my own biases, you know, against other people? It's just covers so many different.
Very much. And it's not just logic, it's discernment. And I remember when my daughter was little, she was, 6 years old, perhaps, maybe even younger than that. And we had a new neighbor with another child about the same age, maybe a little older. And I realized this child was manipulating my daughter.
Wow.
She would whisper things in my daughter's ear, and my daughter would come ask me something. And it's like, well, that's not my child's voice. That's not something she would say. And I began to pay attention and realize what she was doing. So we had a chat, and I talked with my daughter, and I explained, okay, so this is how we figure out what a friend really is and who really is your friend and really isn't. So I taught them early on. There were more opportunities to teach that lesson, by the way, and it's unfortunate, but parents, when you are homeschooling, you have more of an opportunity to teach discernment with finding the right friends and the right surroundings than a traditionally schooled family has, because you're with your student. You can get to know the family of the students your kids are hanging out with and playing with. Because believe me, it matters that the five friendships that your kids have throughout their life is going to make more of an impact than almost anything else. So teach them that discernment early on.
Yeah. Yeah, that is such good advice. Okay, so then can you give us the goods on where we can reach you if anybody wants to take your course, if they want? How early does your road mapping for your course start? At what age do you have?
The roadmap itself starts at the freshman year, so the beginning of freshman year, but you can jump in at any time thereafter. Prior to that, I have a three-part blog. It's really long for families with middle school students, because families seem to think that middle school is literally a pass-through between grade school and high school, but it's really not. There really is a purpose, and that purpose can make a big difference in high school. Let me give you a quick example. In middle school, we usually, if your kid was taking, you know, dance, or they were playing, you know, ball for the neighborhood, you usually keep that up throughout middle school. Nobody's giving it a second thought. Johnny gets dropped off on Wednesday. Mary gets dropped off on Thursday. It's just a thing. But when it comes to high school, your window of opportunity for finding the activity that your child is passionate about is extremely short, a lot shorter than you think it is. So thinking about that in middle school is really important. So again, there's a really long post about that that I encourage you, if you have middle school students, please read that. Where they can find me is there's a checklist on my website, and I think in your show notes you might be able to put the link. It's called 12 Scholarship Secrets, Tips from Prestigious Scholarship Judges. These are things that scholarship judges see all too often that gets most applications thrown in the trash. So parents can use this checklist to be certain that your kids' scholarship applications get the attention it deserves. And the link is www.getaheadoftheclass.com/scholarship-secrets.
Awesome. So I'm going to have that link in my show notes in case anyone missed that. If you're driving or doing laundry while you're listening to this episode, you can come back to the show notes or you can message me for that. And can they also reach you on that website, or do you have a separate contact?
Absolutely. The website does have a contact me area, so be sure to do so. But as soon as they're on the list, so to speak, on my email list, when they download that Scholarship Secrets checklist, they will receive emails from me and they can always reply to that email.
Okay. And so is that article, is it separate from your course, or is that the name of your course?
The course is Cracking the Code to Free College.
Okay.
And they'll find that on the front page of the website, getaheadoftheclass.com. It'll explain a little bit about the course. There are blog posts all over the website that they can find about all kinds of topics from high school to college.
Okay, perfect. Well, I think that wraps up our episode then. And if anyone has questions for Denise, I will be sure to find a way to get you guys connected if you're having any trouble with her website. Denise, thank you so much for giving us all your wisdom and time. It's been such a fun time to talk to you and so insightful. I'm really grateful for all the knowledge you've shared with me today.
Thank you so much, Ashley. Really glad to be able to let people know what's available out there and that college doesn't have to be a debt sentence.
Oh, yeah, that is so good and so true. Well, thank you again, Denise.